Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is March 6, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments in fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about India's central bank plans to fight Supreme Court crypto ruling. Exchange technology developer AlphaPoint raises $5.6 million in latest funding round. Bitcoin's price steady over $9,000 as sentiment stays positive. Crypto exchange OKCoin appoints new CEO to drive U.S. expansion. Overstock's VC wing leads $8.2 million funding round in GrainChain. In excess $130 million IPO to launch next month as exchange seeks NYBIT license. Japan doesn't need a digital yen, asserts BOJ official. Nike, Macy's run blockchain trial with Auburn's RFID lab. Ethereum's Prague POW call features frustration but little progress. That AlphaPoint $5.6 million funding round? It's a loan. Bitcoin maintains gains as global equities slide, U.S. yield hits record lows. IRS Crypto Summit was about the exchange of ideas, not tax guidance. Information overload is stopping us from seeing the truth. Now let's get started. India's central bank plans to fight Supreme Court crypto ruling. While the Indian cryptocurrency industry has won a court battle over a central bank ban on banking access, the war may not yet be over. The Reserve Bank of India, RBI, which issued an order to cut off crypto firms from the country's financial system in April 2018, now says it plans to return to the Supreme Court to fight the Wednesday ruling that overturned its ban, according to an Economic Times report Friday. The RBI will lodge a review petition over the court judge's ruling that the RBI had not been balanced in issuing the order, sources said. Concerns that the restarting of crypto trading could pose a risk to the banking system were cited as the primary reason behind the central bank's coming response. Since Wednesday's ruling, some Indian cryptocurrency exchanges have already announced they have reinstated deposits and withdrawals via bank accounts. Local commentators are predicting a surge in crypto activity in India, where for 2 years exchanges have been forced to either close, leave the country or turn to solely crypto trading. This is the first step towards embracing cryptocurrency in India, which has the potential of becoming one of the largest crypto markets. Ashish Singhal, chief executive of the CoinSwitch exchange, told CoinDesk after the court's ruling. Should the RBI be successful in persuading the court to change its mind on the issue, the nation's crypto industry may face more years in limbo pending proper regulation from the government. Exchange technology developer AlphaPoint raises $5.6 million in latest funding round. Exchange software provider AlphaPoint has secured funding it says will finance the development of sophisticated trading features. The New York-based firm said Thursday it successfully raised $5.6 million in an additional funding round, taking its total capital raised to date to $23.9 million. Established in 2013, AlphaPoint provides trading software used by over 150 exchange clients around the world, according to the firm's figures. The company added support for security token offerings (STOs) a year ago and margin trading features in November. The latest investment will go towards developing new trading features including improved margin trading and liquidity solutions and advanced brokerage capabilities. AlphaPoint co-founder and chief executive Igor Telyatnikov commented that with the additional funding the firm could continue delivering on our mission to enable access to digital assets globally. Alpha Point raised $15 million in its first major funding round in June 2018, with assistance from crypto merchant bank Galaxy Digital. An Alpha Point spokesperson confirmed to CoinDesk that Galaxy had participated in this latest round, but that other investors had opted to not disclose their identities. In other news from the firm, the chief executive of financial advisory firm Janney Montgomery Scott, Tim Sheeve, has joined Alpha Point's board of governors. Sheeve is also a member of the board of governors at the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, FINRA, the body responsible for regulating U.S. brokerage firms. Bitcoin's price steady over $9,000 as sentiment stays positive. As global equity markets continue to get pummeled, Bitcoin's return to the $9,000 level may have been driven by some of the same forces causing a rally in bonds, a desire for respite from a coronavirus-plagued markets. After sharp gains in price Thursday, Bitcoin, BTC, has been trading steadily in a range between $9,000 and $9,200. For the past 24 hours, Bitcoin's price change has been minimal, down 0.5% as of 1800 Coordinated Universal Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Traders see Bitcoin's jump back into the $9,000 range as another sign Bitcoin is trending upward in 2020 while traditional markets stumble. Year to date, Bitcoin is up over 26% while the S&P 500 stock index is down 9%. Cryptocurrency sentiment appears bullish as prices remain above significant moving averages. Although traders seem to be open to viewing the cryptocurrency markets as a safe haven from stock market turmoil, more volatility is possible ahead of May's halving, an event that will slash in half the reward Bitcoin miners obtain. It's a relief rally. In my opinion, we have a likelihood of sweeping another low before the post-halving rally, said Mustafa Al-Mashida of Canadian crypto brokerage firm Secure Digital Markets. The S&P 500 closed down 3% Thursday as coronavirus fears reversed the small post-Super Tuesday rally. Equities traders cheered the results of the U.S. Democratic primary election favoring former Vice President Joe Biden over Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, candidates seen as openly hostile to capital markets. Also, Bitcoin prices moved higher on optimistic banking news from India and positive regulatory clarity from South Korea. I believe gold and BTC are safe havens, said Henrik Kugelberg, a Sweden-based crypto OTC trader. As coronavirus has just started to spread, I believe a strong market will last well until the halving will have effect. To me, it seems plausible that we can hit an all-time high this year, perhaps within 6 months. Gains in the cryptocurrency sector Friday include LISK, LSK, in the green 4%, Ether, ETH, up 2%, and Bitcoin Cash, BCH, appreciating 1%. Losses in crypto include Bitcoin SV, BSV, Bitcoin Gold, BTG, and Ethereum Classic, etc., all down 3%. Crypto exchange OKCoin appoints new CEO to drive U.S. expansion. OKCoin has named its chairman, Hong Fang, as the cryptocurrency exchange's new chief executive. Announced Friday, Fang, who also serves as the San Francisco-based company's chief operating officer, will replace current chief executive Tim Bian as of March 31. She will lead an effort to further develop the firm's crypto trading products for customers in more U.S. states, as well across Asia and Europe. Bian will become Global Government Relations Officer, GGRO, of the exchange's parent company, OK Group. There, he will focus on global growth and maintaining communications with governments and regulators internationally. Prior to his time at OK Group, Bian was chief compliance officer for BitPay. Before that, he served as the anti-money laundering AML officer and head of credit settlement risk at Visa for over 5 years, according to his LinkedIn profile. As a foremost regulatory expert in the crypto industry, Tim Bian will take on the new GGRO role, a spokesperson at OK Group told CoinDesk. We will be able to better leverage his expertise across all units of business within the group. Originally founded in China, OK Group has a variety of crypto and blockchain businesses including trading, enterprise blockchains and mining. It has shifted toward blockchain technology in the county since the Chinese government banned crypto trading in 2017. Fang joined the company in September. She most recently led the investment portfolios and strategic growth at Giant Network, a Chinese gaming company. She comes with 8 years of experience at Goldman Sachs, where she was focused on mergers and acquisitions, capital markets and restructuring, based in New York. Bian helped OKCoin open its first U.S. office in 2017 and supervised its operations. Since then, the exchange has obtained a money transmitter license from multiple states and offered fiat crypto trading services to local customers. The firm first launched U.S. trading services in 2018. Overstock's VC wing leads $8.2 million funding round in GrainChain. GrainChain, a commodities tracing platform that uses smart contracts to open up liquidity for low-income farmers, has raised $8.2 million in its latest funding round, the company announced Friday. Chief executive and founder Luis Macias said the money will bolster GrainChain's burgeoning operations in Mexico, Honduras, and the Southwest United States. "This funding is really going to allow us to add to our operations and scale up the levels that we are anticipating, giving us the ability to implement across the entire supply chain," he said. Overstock VC wing Medici Ventures contributed the bulk at $5 million. An early backer of GrainChain with a $2.5 million equity stake in late 2018, Medici had previously agreed to consider purchasing future equity. It now controls 17.65% of GrainChain, according to a Medici spokesperson. Other new backers include Eden Block, according to a press release. GrainChain envisions itself as a sort of glue between disparate actors in the agriculture supply chain. It brings farmers, bankers, insurers, exporters and trade associations on a unified blockchain platform where they can validate the movement of crops and commodities, and even make payments through event-triggered smart contracts. In September, part of that vision took form as GrainChain inked deals with stakeholders from across the Honduran coffee industry. This included low-income farmers picking the beans, many of whom struggle to secure loans from bankers weary of supply chain inefficiencies. Both farmers and bankers expressed hope at the time that GrainChain's traceability trust factor could change that. Medici CEO Jonathan Johnson said the VC got on board to help support GrainChain's efforts to eliminate middlemen and rehumanize commerce. Macias said the platform has attracted interest from more supply chain stakeholders in the time since. "People are excited about the implementation," he said. The new funding will also build out GrainChain's global presence. Macias said he is currently brokering deals in two more countries that he expects to announce later this year. "We're pleased to support their continued global expansion," Medici's Johnson said of GrainChain. In excess $130 million IPO to launch next month as exchange seeks NYBIT license. INX Limited has entered the home stretch for its $130 million initial public offering (IPO), potentially the largest registered securities sale by a company in the blockchain sector. The cryptocurrency and security token exchange startup is targeting an April launch date for the IPO, people familiar with the situation said. INX is about to kick off a series of presentations to potential investors, known as a roadshow, which was originally supposed to start in January, the sources said. The firm has hired a European investment bank to act as lead underwriter for the IPO, they said. INX is positioning itself as a mature, dutifully compliant exchange eschewing the beg forgiveness, don't ask permission practices that have defined the crypto industry for most of its history. Unlike the initial coin offerings (ICO) that claimed exemptions from securities laws by arguing their tokens weren't investments or by selling only to wealthy investors, INX is registering with the SEC so it can solicit the general public. The process has taken the company 2 years. Doubling down on compliance, the company plans to relocate its headquarters from the blockchain-friendly jurisdiction of Gibraltar to New York, INX disclosed in its prospectus, which was updated on Monday. That means it will have to obtain a state BIT license to serve residents, and it is in talks with the New York Department of Financial Services (NYDFS) to obtain one, the people familiar with the situation said. This is the regulatory equivalent of transferring from a community college to MIT. Only about 20 BIT licenses have been granted since the New York Department of Financial Services (NYDFS) finalized its regulation in 2015, although regulatory sources said the agency has assembled a team to expedite applications. Exchanges including Kraken and Shapeshift stopped doing business in New York, calling the licenses requirements onerous, and NYDFS recently began to reassess its rules. In December, the deadline passed for the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission (SEC) to register objections to INXS prospectus, filed over the summer. With no comments received from the SEC, the company was free to proceed with the offering, which will be sold in the form of tokens on the Ethereum blockchain. Cast of characters. The proceeds from the IPO would fund the launch of a crypto exchange, known as INX Digital, and security token platform, INX Securities. In preparation, INX has lined up several partners. For example, INX has tapped Anchorage and BitGo to custody digital assets on behalf of the exchange's clients, people familiar with the exchange said. Anchorage confirmed its involvement, and INX named BitGo in an SEC filing. Further, Tokensoft is providing design and tech advisory services and QuantStamp will audit the exchange's smart contract code, according to the filing. INXS token would be listed on its own security token platform and on other exchanges, according to the sources. Holders of INXS tokens would get a share of the company's profits and stand in line ahead of equity investors for repayment in the event of bankruptcy. The tokens would also be accepted as payment for trading fees. Meantime, INX has obtained money transmitter licenses in 8 U.S. states, so its crypto exchange will be allowed to handle fiat on-ramp and crypto-to-crypto transactions, the filing said. The exchange would initially list the top 10 coins by market capitalization and add other coins and derivatives later, according to the filing. Japan doesn't need a digital yen, asserts BOJ official. Advanced economies such as Japan's don't need a digital currency, the deputy governor at the Bank of Japan, BOJ, asserted during a recent meeting. Speaking at the Bank for International Settlements' recent Future of Payments Forum, Deputy Governor Masayoshi Amamiya argued a Japanese central bank digital currency, CBDC, currently has little merit. CBDCs could greatly benefit developing countries, such as Cambodia, that have immature payment infrastructures, he said in a speech publicized Friday. But for advanced economies, the costs outweigh the benefits. At this point, there is no need to implement new steps to ensure people's access to central bank money, according to a transcript of his speech. Moreover, the currency systems and the payment and settlement systems of these economies are operating safely and stably. They cannot simply jump into new technologies, or actually, they should not. Assuming CBDCs would operate at lower running costs compared to private initiatives, Amamiya continued, merchants would likely prefer CBDCs over private payment systems, both legacy and cryptocurrencies, but he said this would suppress private business and discourage innovations. If Japan introduced a digital yen, the central bank could also become the sole repository for the entire country's transaction information, raising concerns about how the BOJ would store and protect personal financial data, Amamiya added. Threat from China. Amamiya's comments come after rising speculation that Japan was preparing to issue a digital yen. In February, senior politicians in the country's ruling Liberal Democratic Party filed a formal proposal for the government to issue its own digital currency in the face of a rising monetary threat from the planned digital yuan from China. Amamiya previously ruled out a digital yen in 2018 when he argued it could undermine the country's two-tier financial system without providing additional benefits. In 2019, he said a move to a CBDC would only be viable if the whole country was prepared to abandon cash. In his most recent comments, Amamiya argued there were benefits for countries already experiencing a significant decline in the use of cash to move over to a CBDC model. Sweden's e-krona initiative, he said, was one example where people who have struggled to adapt to cashless payments could be provided with ready access to central bank money. While he doesn't favor a Japanese CBDC presently, Amamiya has advocated for more research into digital currencies. The BOJ was also one of six central banks to form a working group to share findings surrounding CBDCs earlier this year. Nike, Macy's run blockchain trial with Auburn's RFID lab. Blockchain might help major apparel brands from Nike to Macy's better share product data across the retail supply chain, according to a white paper Auburn University's RFID lab published Wednesday. The study, named the Chain Integration Project, CHIP, saw those retailers and others run Hyperledger fabric nodes on a slice of their mammoth supply chains. The study found blockchain to be a promising way to share serialized data after following tens of thousands of products including Nike Kids Air Force One shoes and Michael Kors parkas as they moved between distribution centers. RFID Lab is one of the most prominent outposts for U.S. retailers' experiments with emerging supply chain tech, but blockchain fellow Alan Gulley said it's a relative newcomer to distributed ledger technology. And so CHIP, which began in 2018, became a blockchain trial by fire for the Auburn Research Institute. Many retailers have already been keeping internal tabs on product movements via radio frequency identification (RFID) tags installed in every unit. As one example, Gulley said every box of Nike shoes comes with an RFID tag that helps the athletics giant track its sprawling inventory. However, different retailers' tags store data differently and there's little to no data interoperability. Everyone was speaking a different language. Gulley said, the way they sent data to us was wildly different from one company to another. There wasn't a good common language in place and there wasn't a common platform for them to share that data. That gave the RFID lab two opportunities, build retailers a common language, and build them a platform. The language aspect took up about 70% of the researchers' time, Gulley said. With the help of the many students who operate the lab, Gulley's team built a translator tool that reworks different data streams into the EPCIS standard developed by Belgian nonprofit GS1. Implementing Hyperledger Fabric was simpler but still came with its own set of dilemmas, Gulley said. Rookie-level bugs throttled the system's initial transaction throughput. The team was measuring in seconds per transaction instead of transactions per second, but optimization increased throughput by over 6,500%. We realized pretty quickly how unproven the blockchain technology really is, Gulley said. He compared this study to other high-profile blockchain supply chain trials, like the IBM Food Trust. Those systems track shipments in some. Gulley said CHIP, which looked at reams of data for specific products, was far more granular, and as such more complex. In the final design, each retail pair had a different channel where the pair could run its own closed proof of concept. Nike's vertically integrated supply chain was all in-house, but more interlinked retailers and brands had support from tech vendors and others. The proof of concept ultimately saw thousands of products matched across its nodes. Nike recorded 72,575 items from encoder to distribution center, PVH and Kohl's recorded 3,766, and Macy's, which had the trial's most complex supply chain of a Herman K. distribution center, a Macy's distribution center, and a Macy's store matched 62 products across all three, according to the study. In total, 222,974 items were written onto the blockchain, according to the study. It needs to take on more, though, if it is to go mainstream. The system as it stands right now can process what we need it to, but in the long term we're talking about billions of products flowing through the retail supply chain with these RFID tags. There needs to be a much more robust system in place to handle that, Gulley said. RFID Lab will now take its blockchain study to a consultancy phase of sorts, trying to understand just how much value DLT and RFID data sharing systems can offer the businesses, who, by virtue of their size, can reap millions of dollars in efficiencies with only minor tweaks to their business practices. Gulley predicted blockchain's long-term viability in the supply chain space will rely on a more robust network of service providers being there to assist its growth. For the next phase of this work, there's absolutely going to have to be more involvement and engagement from technology players. If this thing continues to grow beyond a handful of nodes and a handful of operators, it's going to get big pretty fast. Ethereum's Prague POW call features frustration but little progress. Prague POW is still just a proposal. The controversial proposed change to Ethereum's mining algorithm failed to change status after meeting resistance during Friday's core developers call. Ethereum hard fork coordinator James Hancock said Prague POW will not be included on the hard fork schedule going forward. During the call, opponents of the long-discussed Ethereum Improvement Proposal (EIP) voiced their frustrations. Prague POW people are a bunch of profit-seeking miners lobbying the core dev political committee to get what they want, full stop, said Spank Chain CEO and Malik DAO co-founder Amin Soleimani. A hard fork is not just a technical process, said Martin Koppelman, founder of open finance startup Gnosis. A hard fork means creating a narrative around it, convincing 20,000 people at the same time that this is the best thing to do right now. Matt Lugo, founder of crypto venture studio Thesis, joined Soleimani and Koppelman in voicing his concerns. Lugo compared current Prague POW tensions to 2017's Bitcoin, BTC, civil wars, which led to the creation of Bitcoin Cash, BCH. Tweaking the Ethereum hash algorithm isn't quite worth a chain split, he said. The latest. As CoinDesk previously reported, Prague POW's code was released in 2018 as a replacement to the current Ethash mining algorithm. The code was proposed as a remedy to an emerging trend of mining power centralization around ASIC-wielding firms. Some Ethereum community members viewed this trend as dangerous to the community and an unfair advantage against less capital-endowed miners, who typically use GPU-based rigs. The concern can also be found in other cryptocurrency circles, notably with Monero XMR, which has built-in code changes every few months to disincentivize ASIC mining. Prague POW was nearly merged into Ethereum in January 2019, but failed at the 11th hour due to third-party audits exposing key vulnerabilities. Earlier last month, Prague POW popped back into the conversation as a hard fork candidate. As of Friday, the EIP has been left on final status but has yet to receive core developer support to be executed as a major code change. For and against, the common anti-Prague POW argument centers on the transition to ETH 2.0 and its new proof-of-stake (PoS) consensus algorithm. Under PoS, mining Ether (ETH) will become a thing of the past. Prague POW antagonists think addressing the current proof-of-work chain when the community is nearing its major switch to PoS is superfluous, if not dangerous. We should focus on POS and communicating the transition to POS where mining rewards are decreased over time, said Koppelman. That alone would prevent people from doing large investments in 6 or 8 gigabyte ASICs. Pro-Prague POW members represented on Friday's call by Christy Lee Minahan, an algorithm developer who helped create Prague POW, and cryptocurrency educator Michael Carter say the Ethereum network is liable to be captured by ASIC miners. Minahan said GPU mining is a common way for people to enter the Ethereum community. Hobbyists will be walled off from the Ethereum garden if an algorithm change isn't made, she said. Minahan also pointed out a forthcoming study from Coinmetrics on so-called nonce patterns in Ethereum mining. In crypto mining, machines look for a nonce, or a specific golden number, to create a block and receive a coin reward. In some situations, you can tell what portion of a network is running a certain model of mining rig depending on the nonce patterns guessed by the machines. Minahan said the study from Coinmetrics suggests that 40% of the Ethereum network is running on Bitmain's Antminer E3 miner, an ASIC. Unfortunately, the E3 will become obsolete in the next few months, said Minahan and Carter, alluding to a recent report from Mining Pool 2 miners. Minahan and Carter say they fear a more powerful ASIC miner will replace the E3, creating a tech cycle that iPhone users are quite familiar with, planned obsolescence. Cornering the network into changing products every time Bitmain produces a new mining rig undercuts the network's security, they said. This fear becomes even more pressing given the size of the Ethereum network, said Starkware product manager Lewis Guthman. Creating a GPU-friendly Ethereum is good for the network's robustness, he said. A compromise between the two camps was also given screen time on the call. Authored by Ben DeFrancesco, founder of software advisor Scope Lift, this middle path would make Prog PoW a testnet for the time being. After further audits, the code would be issued as an emergency backup in case of an ASIC attack on the current ETHASH algorithm. What an ASIC attack is remains unknown, Ethereum developer Tim Bako pointed out. As of now, nothing has been decided. Core developers on the call said they feel the community is fairly anti-Prog PoW. Without this support, a change cannot be implemented even if perceived as a net benefit to the network. As the call closed, DeFrancesco pointed out that both parties have begun talking past each other, though there does seem to be agreement on one thing: nobody wants a contentious chain split. That AlphaPoint $5.6 million funding round? It's a loan. The recent $5.6 million injection of capital into New York-based AlphaPoint came from Bridge Financing, a short-term business loan, the company confirmed to CoinDesk. But AlphaPoint would not say who made the loan or its terms. Bridge financing is often used to cover financial shortfalls. We can say that it was led by a new investor whom we cannot disclose, with participation from existing investors including Galaxy. Patrick Shields, head of marketing for AlphaPoint, told CoinDesk. AlphaPoint, which provides digital asset trading software for cryptocurrency exchanges in various local markets, raised a $15 million venture round in June 2018 led by Galaxy Digital. Half of that amount was subsequently transferred to a Galaxy-managed fund during the final quarter of 2018. Galaxy took a $3.1 million write-down that remained on the balance sheet in the third quarter of 2019, saying it was due primarily to the company's performance being below forecast. During the announcement for the 2018 Galaxy round, executives touted the company's blockchain-based asset issuance capabilities. Galaxy's Greg Wasserman, who joined AlphaPoint's board at the time, noted then that the market opportunity for digitizing illiquid assets is tremendous. Several people who spoke to CoinDesk regarding this side of AlphaPoint's business indicated these blockchain-based issuance efforts, such as a real estate tokenization project, have not been successful. AlphaPoint's core business depends on cryptocurrency trading volume, as its revenue model is based on charging customers, mostly small exchanges, monthly licensing plus a cut of trading fees. Volume on established exchanges like Bitstamp dipped lower as 2019 closed, and while recovering, have not seen the same levels since this past summer. As well, several of AlphaPoint's flagship customers have gone out of business. For example, Canada-based Einstein Exchange, which featured prominently on AlphaPoint's homepage in 2018, collapsed in October, owing $12.4 million to its account holders. Another AlphaPoint customer, London Block Exchange, was liquidated in January. Meanwhile, new sources of trading, such as derivatives platforms, over-the-counter, OTC, desks, securities exchanges and decentralized exchanges, DEXs, are crowding into AlphaPoint's core market. The latest debt funding round comes after Binance's announcement of its own solution for potential cryptocurrency exchange entrepreneurs. Called Binance Cloud, it allows local operators to use the company's software and access its liquidity. AlphaPoint CEO Igor Telyatnikov, who took on the top role last summer after a company restructuring, says its main rivals aren't packaged software solutions like Binance Cloud but exchanges building software from scratch. The biggest competitor is typically build your own exchanges versus buy, Telyatnikov said. As all cryptocurrency exchanges continue a relentless quest to add features and functions to entice traders, AlphaPoint is pushing its platform into areas its customers need to stay competitive. The core matching engine, order management and order gateways are all one system that have different configurations depending on how customers want to deploy and use it, he noted. This enables Alpha Point customers to run not just an exchange order book, but also a brokerage or an OTC service where the customer is facilitating all orders for its users. Alpha Point said it serves over 1 million end users and enables 100 million annual trades for its customers. Teliatnikov also told CoinDesk that Alpha Point is planning on future capabilities to connect into DEXs and improve the overall flexibility within its software platform. He said many customers have development teams that code functionality to tailor Alpha Point's software for specific uses. The core focus for us is to develop and roll out liquidity, leverage and lending solutions, said Teliatnikov. It's a change from 18 months ago, when the movement to tokenize everything for the company seems to have faltered. In addition to funding, Alpha Point also added some oversight, a new board member and new advisor. Tim Sheeve, president and CEO who serves on the FINRA, Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, Board of Governors, has joined the board. January Mail, CEO and founder of consulting firm The Mail Group, is now an advisor. Bitcoin maintains gains as global equities slide, U.S. yield hits record lows. Bitcoin is staying firmly in the green amid a strong sell-off in traditional markets. The situation contrasts with last week when the top cryptocurrency by market cap had dropped sharply in tandem with equities and bond yields. Bitcoin, BTC, found bids near $8,800 during Thursday's Asian trading hours and rose above $9,150 later in the day. Since then, prices have largely stayed well above the $9,000 mark. At press time, Bitcoin is changing hands at $9,100, representing a 2% gain on a 24-hour basis, having defended a brief dip to the psychological support of $9,000 at 1 o'clock Coordinated Universal Time on Friday, according to CoinDesk's Bitcoin Price Index. While Bitcoin is looking bullish, the traditional markets are witnessing risk-averse trading, with a slide in equities and a rise in demand for gold and government bonds causing a drop in yields. At press time, major European indices including Germany's DAX, France's CAC 40 and the UK's FTSE 100 are down between 1.5% and 2.2%. Asian stocks took a beating earlier today, too, while futures on Wall Street Benchmark Index, the S&P 500, are currently down 1%. Furthermore, the U.S. 10-year Treasury yield is currently trading at record lows below 0.8%, representing a 13 basis point drop on the day. Gold, the classic safe haven asset, is currently at an 11-day high of $1,681 per ounce. So it's clear investors are selling risk and buying safe havens, likely because the coronavirus outbreak is starting to threaten to become a global pandemic and could cause far greater damage to the world economy than previously expected. Bitcoin a safe haven or risk asset? Bitcoin's much debated safe haven narrative could strengthen again, given the cryptocurrency is flashing green amid the risk aversion in equities and the rising odds of an additional Federal Reserve rate cut. The interest rate market thinks the Fed will again cut rates by 50 basis points at its March 18th policy meeting, having delivered an emergency cut earlier this week. The crypto market community stands divided on whether Bitcoin is a pro-risk or an anti-risk asset. Prominent observers including Anthony Pompliano of Morgan Creek Digital are of the opinion Bitcoin is a hedge against monetary easing, while billionaire investor Michael Novogratz believes the cryptocurrency is an anti-risk or safe haven asset. These arguments, however, could be challenged on the fact that Bitcoin failed to score gains during last week's stock market sell-off. The S&P 500 fell by 4% last week and Bitcoin tanked by 13% in parallel. And while the coronavirus scare dominated market sentiment throughout February, the cryptocurrency suffered an 8.5% slide. If we look at the behavior of the Bitcoin price over the last couple of weeks, as concerns over a global pandemic have ramped up, it is clear that Bitcoin continues to behave more like a high-risk investment than like the safe haven which it promises to be, CoinDesk columnist and co-founder of the Open Money Initiative Jill Carlson noted earlier this week. That said, Bitcoin has not had a strong positive correlation with equities either. For instance, the cryptocurrency fell from $13,000 to $6,500 during the second half of 2019, even though the S&P 500 rallied by nearly 10%. All in all, Bitcoin appears to not be strongly correlated with other asset classes. It could yet become a safe haven, although that would require a deep investment in education, according to Carlson. From a technical analysis perspective, the cryptocurrency looks set to extend the ongoing rise toward higher resistance levels. Bitcoin bounced up from $9,000 early Friday, marked by Arrow, reinforcing the case for a rally to $9,550 put forward by an inverse head and shoulders breakout confirmed on Thursday. The breakout is also backed by an above 50-year bullish reading on the relative strength index. Bitcoin is looking north with the MACD histogram producing higher lows in favor of the bulls. Further, the 5-day average has crossed above the 10-day average, signaling a bullish shift in sentiment. Resistance at $9,312, February 4th low, could be put to test over the weekend. A violation there would expose the inverse head and shoulders breakout target of $9,550. Alternatively, if prices find acceptance under the former hurdle turn support of the inverse head and shoulders neckline $9,000, some buyers may exit the market, yielding a pullback to the 200-day average at $8,704. A close under $8,410 Sunday's low is needed to invalidate the bullish reversal doji pattern confirmed on March 2. That would signal a continuation of the drop from February highs near $10,500. IRS Crypto Summit was about the exchange of ideas, not tax guidance. Washington, we might be overcomplicating things, an audience member at the Internal Revenue Service's Crypto Summit said midway through the first panel. The IRS hosted four panels Tuesday, discussing technology, exchanges, the tax filing process and regulatory guidance in a day-long session uniting industry stakeholders, tax experts and regulators. The goal, sort out some of the questions and concerns the broader crypto holding public has about reporting its taxes. While there were no answers and no new guidance for the industry, though virtual currency did make it to the IRS's priority guidance plan published Friday, the event still represents a step forward for the opaque regulatory agency, which in a decade has only produced two pieces of binding guidance and published some non-binding documents for taxpayers and financial advisors. There's a clear desire from both industry and regulators to understand this, Chandan Lodha of Cointracker told CoinDesk. Financial advisors want to ensure they don't have their clients fulfill costly reporting requirements only to discover they didn't need to, EY partner Michael Meisler said during a panel. At another point, a Coinbase vice president asked for clarity about reporting forms. On the IRS side, numerous agency employees filled the auditorium with questions of their own, asking for clarity on how blockchain forensics works on a technical level, how privacy coins differ from cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, BTC, and even just what specifically they could do to simplify the process for taxpayers. There is some frustration on the industry side at the lack of existing guidance, and the event did not indicate that any new guidance will be forthcoming. Still, Lodha said the event was a positive step. Unlike traditional panels, where a moderator asks panelists questions, the IRS event seemed geared from the outset to let audience members and even panelists ask IRS officials to clarify existing tax guidance and address lingering questions. Calculations and filing. Specific questions included the best ways to calculate cost basis, how to treat coins bought from different exchanges or transferred between exchanges, whether microtransactions can be exempted, and how to marry what tax code says with non-binding guidance published by the IRS so far. It would certainly be more helpful if there was published guidance rather than just these frequently asked questions, because in the absence of that, what we have is, well, this isn't really authority, said Ice Meisler, during a panel on tax return preparation. It was a common refrain. Audience members and panelists alike, including Kraken head of global tax Lisa Askenazi Felix, Coinbase tax VP Kyle Zander, and American Institute of Certified Public Accountants AICPA senior manager Amy Yichong Wang, said a lot of confusion stems from the fact that a lot of cryptocurrencies still don't fall neatly into any existing tax laws. The rules don't exist today to tell you exactly how to file taxes, Askenazi Felix said during a panel on exchanges. Ice Meisler told CoinDesk after the event that he believed it went well, noting IRS Assistant Deputy Commissioner John Cardone opened his panel by telling audience members the tax collector was looking for specific issues of interest to the industry. The people that were there from industry were asking questions that were very targeted, whether they develop software that conducts tax calculations or they were from exchanges, they were asking specific questions, Meisler said. One key detail that remains unclear is how exactly taxpayers can calculate the value of their digital assets. The IRS has indicated in its frequently asked questions that individuals who buy and sell crypto at different times can use a method like first in, first out, meaning if you buy Bitcoin in January, March and April and sell in July, August and September, you would calculate the difference in price between the first Bitcoin you bought in January and the first Bitcoin you sold in July. However, this may not actually be allowable. AICPA's Wang said during a panel the tax code says users should use specific identity, meaning the cost should be calculated on the actual specific Bitcoin being transacted. So there is no binding authority at the moment that allows you to use anything other than specific identification, she said. It's really important for practitioners that the IRS comes out with clarity and guidance saying you can use other forms of tracking basis. Sophistication. While there were specific questions, various IRS officials also asked what the crypto industry might see as more basic questions, including what is an API, what regulatory arbitrage is, and how cryptocurrencies are transacted. I'm getting the sense there's a wide array of sophistication in the room, said CoinSource's Arnold Spencer during a panel on technology updates. Meisler told CoinDesk that having individuals who appeared to have different levels of understanding about the crypto space and technology is not surprising, and having everyone in a room together was likely a good thing. Before someone can answer how do we tax cryptocurrency? Or how do we tax a hard fork or an airdrop? It's helpful to understand what the mechanics of those transactions are, he said. It's unclear whether the IRS will be able to publish anything actionable in the near future. However, there are some steps it can take immediately to clarify its existing guidance. Wang told CoinDesk that just moving its list of FAQs into the internal review bulletin would provide some clarity, a view Meisler echoed. Because the FAQs are not published in the bulletin, they're not binding guidance, the IRS can change any recommendations on it as it wishes, which the agency has actually been doing, Wang said. Some of the questions on the FAQ now appear at different points than when first published. Turning these questions into binding guidance would give financial advisors and taxpayers the comfort of knowing they were looking at proper legal guidance, which could prevent them from inadvertently violating the tax code. Information overload is stopping us from seeing the truth. York Rhodes III, a CoinDesk columnist, co-founded Blockchain at Microsoft and is principal program manager, Azure Blockchain Engineering and board member of Blockchain for Social Impact Coalition and Enterprise Ethereum Alliance, and founding team member of Baseline Protocol. Congratulations, we've arrived in 1984. Books, television and movies have foreshadowed our eerie relationship with technology since long before 1984. The idea of a reality so perfectly created you can't tell it is manufactured has long been the stuff of science fiction. You need look no farther than films like The Matrix, Total Recall or Inception. While real-life attempts at pervasive virtual reality have largely failed outside of gaming, things are going swimmingly well in the world of data manipulation. Our perception of reality is now shaped by the data we willingly consume from unquestioned sources across social media, news and video. Congratulations, he says to himself, this new reality has arrived in your lifetime. We now live in a world where people speak their truth. I applaud people speaking their truth, especially people speaking truth to power, but what is the objective truth? What does the phrase objective truth mean now and how do we arrive at it? Some philosophers will disagree there can be an objective truth, it is all about perception. For simplicity, let us say it is an attribute of reality that all people can agree on, whether they have met or had a shared experience. Know that your truth may not be the same as their truth. This is about lived experiences. Regardless, we must share our truth and speak truth to power even though it may disrupt the status quo. Q. Greta Thunberg. Her fortitude in bringing light to the science of climate change amidst trolls, skeptics and science deniers provides a stunning example of speaking truth to power. Information is so dense that most people cannot consume enough to ferret out what is real. In the United States, our court systems mete out justice circumstantially based on the many variables at play in courtrooms. The biggest variable is information presented and withheld, and what jurors can be convinced to believe. My legal colleagues would agree this is simply a legal proceeding designed to determine the truth of whether a defendant committed the crimes charged. This isn't about truth but about the presentation of a set of information to jurors and their perception based on data. This is the system we have, but it is clearly about creating a reality and perception of the circumstances based on a select set of data. In contract law, truth means sticking to the terms of the contract. Agreement about a common state of things defined by a contract is, in this case, the truth. Arriving at that common understanding of the truth often involves a great deal of effort by both parties to a contract. In many cases, the data don't support a single view of the truth, so the parties agree to split the difference or disputed values and continue on contracting the next month. This is a pretty sad state of affairs caused simply by not having a common set of data to determine the truth of what happened. The problem is information overload. It's an old meme that on the internet no one knows you are a dog. Since search became prevalent on the internet, the question of who you are on has been answered through available data. Creating a positive perception about yourself or your business on the internet is possible, even if the reality is different. Even fixing reputation can be solved by creating many positive references and getting them to rank high or show up on the first few pages of searches. Do this with enough good references and the negative references become invisible to most casual searchers. This isn't an information asymmetry problem, it is a stack overload problem for our brains. There is too much information overloading our circuits. This overload pervades everything we do daily and creates our reality. This is the problem with social media. It presents a few short data points without much substance. If the source, posting organization or individual is credible or supposedly believable, and the soundbite is good, it can become viral. This unverified soundbite then pervades more and more information feeds to more and more people. If this soundbite is repeated enough, it becomes people's reality. Even worse, if historically trusted sources are taken over by people with different interests, what was once a credible news outlet can use that credibility to advance questionable soundbites into our collective psyche. We have seen plentiful examples of the impact of this. Fox News now looks more like RT, the at POTUS Twitter account bears little semblance to an official presidential account. Sinclair Media requires talking points of a particular political group to be injected into local radio broadcasts. No amount of digital uniqueness, truth machine, and magical internet money will save us from ourselves. Al Gore's plan for the information superhighway was legislated to solve a commercial problem with political will. It was meant to bridge the digital divide to advantage those without access to the internet. The goal was to remove a blind spot to the digital world of information. But the superhighway we envisioned has become a landfill of soapboxes and used car salesmen hawking their next promotion or scam. The road isn't clogged, our brains are saturated. Information is so dense that most people cannot consume enough to ferret out what is real, let alone validate the actual source crafting that reality. And this is only getting worse in the form of fake news, questionable information sources across our media, credible sources taken over, promotions disguised as good causes, charity washing, and more recently the risk of deepfakes. We haven't escaped this problem in our little blockchain cryptocurrency bubble of the world. The exact same symptoms exist here. All one has to do is look at crypto Twitter. How can anyone not well-versed in the history, personalities, names, and background material possibly make an informed decision based on the data presented? No amount of digital uniqueness, truth machine, and magical internet money will save us from ourselves, and from being bought by others. It's not like we don't see this happening every day in our politics, passions and, yes, in our blockchain bubble. If we can't find a way to create inherent trust into the data we feed our brains, our worst instincts will overwhelm our ability to change the world. I have some ideas. Join me on a journey to find out how trust-bearing technologies can help transform our digital and physical world and maybe just maybe, help save our planet. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.